Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
Welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach Gus Bradley. And Gus, I'm sure you were anxious to get back to work on Wednesday this week after a tough loss, a very tough loss against the New England Patriots.
It was a tough loss, and you know, for us to go through the film, but a lot of lessons now, I think, for all of us, you know, as we look at, you know, they're a very good team. Tom Brady is an excellent quarterback and a great challenge for us. But, you know, I think there are a lot of lessons for us, so we'll take them. And the biggest thing is to get back on the field and get back to work. And that's exactly what we did. Really appreciate our players. And you know, I think that this game can't come fast enough.
You know, Mondays are always difficult for the players because, you know, I know you call it Tell the Truth Mondays. And Monday is just a reality check because, you know, you think you maybe played a certain way. And then you actually find out how you played because you're watching it. And so the players kind of learn on Monday. Tuesdays are their typical day off. As a coaching staff, on Tuesdays, do you guys reflect and say, okay, here's what we learned?
Well, we try to do that on Monday because the players are done with meetings at 3 in the afternoon or so. We take that time to kind of reflect on it and go through it. And then, you know, quickly we start our scouting report at 5 o'clock and we're off and running on the next opponent.
And never look back.
Never look back.
Never look back. That's got to be difficult to do sometimes because in the back of your mind, you know, you're thinking,
right,
that's smart.
Yeah, you got to remove that cloud as fast as possible. It is hard. It's hard not to go back and the would-haves and could-haves and what would you have done differently, and you still might want to think about that on Tuesday. But you have to have the discipline to really clean it out of your mind and move on because the next opponent is the most important, and to get ready and prepared that whole week for this, you know, the upcoming chance on Sunday is important.
From a team standpoint, what's the one thing that you learned? Did you say, hey, we got to get this right against New England?
Well, I think there are some things that, you know, obviously the, you know, defensively looking at that. You know what? It's hard, Logs. I mean, the truth is, and I sit here and I'm worried about how I say it to make it sound like, oh, Gus, you know, but, you know, it's 13-3, a minute 40 left to go in the first half. We're driving the ball. I would have signed up for that. You know, hey, we got a chance to go 13-10 at halftime in Foxborough, and let's come out. Even in the second half, they came out. They kick a field goal like they did at 16-10. Offense has the ball 9 minutes. Okay. It didn't work out that way. So I'm most disappointed in how we finished the first half and how we played in the second half. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm most disappointed out, that we didn't play better and up to our capabilities at that time frame. And there's no excuse. You can say, you know, whatever took place, but we've got to come out of that locker room, regardless of what took place right before the half, and play at a high level.
Right, and it's because sometimes it's tough to recover when you're playing a great team like the New England Patriots and Tom Brady. But at the end of that first half, a couple of plays you're talking about to where it sets you back, the interception, which wasn't Blake's best throw. You know, you really haven't seen really – I don't know if we saw any throws like that out of Blake where the ball kind of wobbled a little bit. And then also kind of going before that, you had an opportunity at a touchdown, ended up kicking the field goal. You had Corey Grant matched up against a linebacker.
Right.
Great opportunity there. He wasn't able to bring it down, catchable ball. And then also I think it was on the same drive, you had the illegal formation. And I was very confused about that call during the game because originally you guys had – Mercedes Lewis on the line of scrimmage and Alan Hearns was on the line of scrimmage, so you had it covered up. Explain the ruling on that, because so many times you see in the National Football League to where the formation might be illegal, but then all of a sudden one player realizes that, hey, I'm in an illegal formation. He adjusts real quick, and then they don't call it.
Right. If you're set in an illegal formation, you can't shift back to a legal formation.
Okay.
And that's what took place. You know, Hearns caught it. But it happened late, you know, and yeah, the formation that we ran the play in was a legal formation, but how we got to it was the issue.
I was kind of wondering about that because, so many times you see guys adjust, but I guess it's got to happen fairly quick for
yeah.
the officials to keep the flag in their pocket.
That's right.
You know, and that New England Patriots game, you know, watching film of Tom Brady before the game, and you just sit there and you marvel at some of his decision-making process. And then you watch the film, you know, you watch both sides of the ball, and you watch a young player like Blake Bortles, and you sit there and you go, that's where you want your quarterback to be, to where when he takes the snap, he's got a pretty good idea of where he needs to go with the ball as soon as it's in his hands. How long does it take for a quarterback to get to that point? I mean, is there a timeline that's set, or is this – it could be different for everybody?
Well, it can be different for everybody, but for most cases, you know, you're looking for continuity to where he's in the same offense for a number of years, you know, like Tom Brady's been or like Aaron Rodgers has been. Because when they're, you know, they've been in the offense for quite some time, they really own the offense. They start telling the coaches, these are the plays that I like, these are the ones I do well, and it goes on from there. So I'm not saying that as a younger quarterback you can't do well early, but I think with those guys, the benefit they have going for them is experience in a system.
Yeah, and from my notes, my mental notes in the game, there were a lot of third and longs. And for a young quarterback, I'm not trying to make excuses, be saying the word, the term young, but that's the reality of it. It would be nice if all of a sudden it's third and one, third and three, third and four, but you guys had a tremendous number of third and six plus or seven plus downs in that game against the New England Patriots. And the New England Patriots defense is solid, but any defense can be better than solid when they've got third and seven.
Sure. You get up into that third and seven to ten range, you're going to see the production of the defense go up. You know, it jumps up quite a bit. So you're right. We had the drive where we had the penalty, the holding call. That moved us back when we were on the 50. So, you know, those things can put yourself into third and long situations. So, you know, we got to clean those things up. I think we had, what, seven penalties? So, you know, even the interception, although it was unfortunate, he's been better with decisions. One interception the last, what, two games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, there's going to be mistakes that happen. And, you know, we just got to, you know, do everything we can to limit some of the other things that we can't control. And, you know, and that's how we got to look at going in this game.
We're prepping for this week's game against the Indianapolis Colts because, you know, the league comes out with the ranking sheet. You know, offenses rank. Whatever, 1 through 32, total offense, run, pass. They do the individual rankings, quarterback ratings, et cetera. And I don't even look at it until you get to the third game because it's just after two games, it's just not enough sample. After the third game, I start paying attention to it and came across this number, which I said, okay, I mean, that's a positive sign. You know, because when you look at Blake Bortles and you look at the overall passer rating, which is a 78.3, which you want it to be higher. Of course, you always want everything to be higher. But the one number that was encouraging to me is that his third down quarterback rating is a 96.6. And quarterbacks' jobs are to move the chains and convert on third down. And so to me, you know, trying to find a positive sign for a young quarterback,
sure,
is that number right there.
Well, he's doing a number of, let's say, better things, obviously, than he did last year. And you're right. Sometimes as coaches, as fans, we say, okay, we want more. Be this guy right now. And believe me, he wants it to be that way too. So, you know, I think as he goes and gains experience in games, not only just the throws to make, but how to handle, you know, situational football and where we are in a game and things like that, that's, you know, part of the learning curve. And, you know, each week that's a challenge, and depending on the score, it's a challenge.
How pleased are you with his poise? You know, you have, you know, first game of the year, not what you wanted. Second game of the year, very clean. Third game of the year, okay, not what you wanted. But how has he handled, because you've had two examples of that, you know, the first game of the year and then obviously the third game of the year against the New England Patriots. How pleased have you been with how he's handled himself on the practice field, in the meeting rooms, and how he's handled himself amongst his teammates after those two tough losses?
Well, he's handled himself great, and I think that his work ethic is at a high, high, high level. I mean, the meetings at night and going through stuff, so that part hasn't changed. His demeanor hasn't changed. I think that when you look at Blake, you'd say, you know, he's made some mistakes, but his play is at a higher, consistent level, and that's what we're seeing. So, you know, we need to get that percentage even higher, but that's with everybody on our team. But, you know, like they said, there's going to be mistakes made.
Looking earlier in the week, I was talking to somebody, and you talk about the performance of a young team. You guys are young. No excuse, but that's reality. You got a young quarterback. A lot of times the inconsistencies kind of show up with a young team or a young player. And you hope that, you know, kind of like the stock market, you know, one week it's up, the next week it's down. The next week after that, it might be up higher than it was 2 weeks ago. Are you starting to see signs that, okay, we're doing things better, but now we need to start to see it on game day to where we can draw a line through all these points and hopefully at the end of 16 that line is going up.
Right. I would say this. I would agree with you that young can't be an excuse because there's players that are young in the league and go out there and perform at a high level. So we've seen that. There's players that do that. So that's the challenge. I like the progress a guy like Allen Robinson's making. I like the progress Allen Hurns are making. They're playing good. They're young. Mm-hmm. So it can't be pick and choose when you want to use that as excuse. A challenge for us is, even though you are young, play up to your talent level. Then let's see. Then let's have a discussion. But, you know, these guys, we've got some good young players. They got to play up to their potential, you know, or where they're at their best consistently week in and week out.
Defense angry this week?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, they know that wasn't us, and I think that, you know, as we look at the tape and they see some things we could have done better. But, you know, a game like that, you want to move on very fast. But, you know, they'll learn from it. Learn from it. Hard lessons.
Sometimes hard lessons and a little bit of pain and anger can be a good thing.
That's right. That's right.
All right. For season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. And we'll talk about the injury report right here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jeff Loggum alongside the head coach Gus Bradley here on the Gus Bradley Show. You know, it seems like the last couple weeks, the injury reports have always been critical, and it's not typically like that in the NFL season. But it seems like the league overall this year, there's been a lot of injuries of concern early in the season. Have you ever been with a football team at this level to where you've had injuries to where you're looking at, okay, can we get 46 dressed, 47 dressed?
No, I would say, to be honest, no, I haven't. But you're right, there's a lot of teams facing injuries and have lost key players. So, it is different. You know, I don't know how many other teams and what their injury status is other than the team that we're going to play. But, you know, it sure sounds like a lot of teams are facing the same obstacles.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the Cowboys. I mean, one of the teams that everybody knows. I mean, starting quarterback, starting wide receiver, going to miss significant time. And you guys have some that have missed significant time and some that you may be getting back this week. Let's look at a couple of these guys. Andre Branch, I don't even think he was on the injury report today.
No, he got some reps today in team situations. And so for us, it's just deciding, you know, where he's at, how much he can play, if he can play. You know, we just got to wait till the training room after going through a practice like today and yesterday. Where is he at and what can we count on and then make decisions after that?
Is that hard? I mean, for injuries overall and injured players overall, to make that determination with a player, you know, I think with veteran players that have been around for a while and you know and you're familiar with and you can trust them, it's probably easier to maybe gauge at where you're going to be at on a Friday or Saturday or Sunday on game day.
I think what we can gauge is that if they've missed practice, how we can anticipate they'll play. You know, I think that part. The part about the injuries is really a little bit out of our hands in that our doctor's got to clear them, you know, which is a good thing for the players. If they're not cleared, they're not ready to go, doesn't matter, then they don't play. So that part is really taken out of my hands. And, you know, what I'm looking for is the players. We talk about compete to get better. If you're not healthy and you're not ready, you're not ready. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you can't go. But still compete and don't look at it as any other way. And that's what I'm seeing with our players. When I see them compete to get back as soon as possible, like Brancher has the opportunity to come back sooner than maybe anticipated, and a Luke Jokel soon anticipated, and Gratz soon anticipated. That's awesome. You know, these guys are competing their tails off to get back. And, you know, that's what's great.
I was watching Andre Branch warm up prior to the New England Patriots game, and he was doing conditioning with Sendarek Marks over there on the field before the game, as most inactive players do. And I'm watching him run, and I'm like, wow, he looks really good. I mean, this was an injury that was expected, you know, I think it was termed a significant injury when it happened in the preseason, and he looked really good.
Yeah, and that's what I say with our injuries. In most cases, we're very fortunate in that these aren't season-ending injuries. You know, we're going to have be without some guys here and there, you know, at periods of time early. But, you know, there's a chance that, you know, those guys will be able to come back and help us. And that's the good thing about some of our injuries.
Well, and Jonathan Cyprian, Dwayne Gratz, boy, it's going to be nice to possibly get a couple guys back in the secondary, because this week you're looking at, you know, an injury to Devon House, an injury to Sergio Brown. I mean, just when you think, you know, you maybe you're starting to get the pieces whole again, all of a sudden, you know, you take a few out to add a few.
Right. But the good news is Sip practice and Branch practice and Grazi practice. So, you know, those are all good signs. We'll see, you know, how they come out of this week in practice, well, what there'll be for us on Sunday. And then these other guys, they're competing. We'll just wait and see what we get on the report.
How's Josh Evans doing? You know, he's injured in that game against the Patriots.
Man, let me tell you about him. This guy, I mean, his shoulder last year, his knee, and he practiced today. You know,
I was shocked by that.
He is, you know, every injury is different, so you can't compare anybody to anybody else. But just his mentality and toughness and what he's all about, I mean, incredible. And, you know, we've got a lot of guys like that, but once you brought his name up, you know, I want to make sure we talk about that. It's something else now.
Well, looking at the offensive side of the ball, Luke Jokel had an ankle, did not play last week. Brandon Linder's got a shoulder. How are they doing?
Luke Jokel is practice. He got some reps in practice today. So, again, we'll wait and see how the trainers feel about that. But competing like he should be. And with Linder, you know, we just got to wait and see. Our objective is to try to get him and Marquise both ready for Sunday. And, you know, we're going about it the way we think gives them the best opportunity, and that was to hold them out. And, you know, we'll wait and see with their trainers tomorrow where they're at.
How's Marquise doing mentally through all this? Because, well, you know, I mean, if from a fan standpoint, I'm a lot of people get frustrated. I mean, here's
sure.
The guy, all of a sudden he missed a lot of practice, he's missed a lot of time, and then all of a sudden he comes back, plays one game, then the next game he can't go, and then he's on the sideline warming up, and you're like, okay, play.
You know, I don't know how much in-depth to go to injuries when I talk about these guys, but Marquise, these are injuries. You know, these are on the MRI-type injuries, and that's where you feel bad. Right. I mean, he's out there training, rehabbing, going through things, and then something unfortunate happens, and then it shows up, and you're like, God. I mean, his work ethic is great. I mean, he wants to play worse than anybody, and then these things pop up. So hopefully we'll see with this one what it turns out to be, and, you know, we'll go for there. But for his sake, you know, you'd like to have him where he can have some consistency and he knows his health is in top shape.
The one thing from just, you know, listening to him, he seems to have a great attitude through it all, which it would probably be very easy with some of the things that he's dealt with to be very down, but he still seems to remain upbeat.
Well, that's the competitiveness. I mean, because you know, right, Logs, your attitude towards your injury can have a lot to depend on how soon you come back. And I think that's where he's competing now. He's making sure he doesn't get down. He's making sure he doesn't get frustrated. He's sure that doesn't cause anxiety, because all those things can extend an injury. And he's battling that part of it right now. I think you saw where he said, you're frustrated. No, I'm not going there. I'm not even talking about that. Well, he's competing, and he's trying to get it to where that doesn't enter so that he has a quicker chance to heal. And like I said, I appreciate that about him.
Last guy that just wanted a quick mention here, Julius Thomas had the opportunity, I think, to get the hand looked at once again by the doctors. Was there any information? I mean, was it positive? Was it what you expected?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I don't know, expected. It was good news. You know, I think, you know, we're waiting to see, and it came back, and it was good news. So it means that he can keep progressing. The good news about Julius is no setbacks. You know, nothing that moved him back a week or anything like that. So, you know, he'll have another test, and then we'll see where he's at.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we'll talk more with the head coach right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And we're back here on the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logan with the head coach. And Gus, this week, The Indianapolis Colts are on the horizon, a great football team. I mean, if you look at them over the last 3 years under their head coach Chuck Pagano, he's had 11 wins in each of the last 3 years. And a streak that is the best in the National Football League. They've won 13 consecutive division games, which is a remarkable accomplishment. And I know that you guys have talked about getting to the point where you're owning the division. And it starts at Indy because that's the team that has been owning the division.
Right. And, you know, I think that's what we talked to our team about that. I mean, that was from, you know, when we started saying, hey, let's build a team that has the ability to own it year after year. And, you know, and then take it from there. So it's good. Our players believe in it. Okay. Well, here's an opportunity. We started that at the end of last year, you know, and talked to them about that type of mentality. And so, yeah, we got a chance to go to Indy and a division opponent, and it's exciting for the team. And, again, a chance to build something.
Is it easier facing a team like Indianapolis that you're seeing twice a year because of the familiarity that you have with them versus a team that maybe you don't see very often, like a New England Patriot or Patriots, or like a Carolina Panthers?
I would say that what it does, it gives you a better opportunity to know their personnel and what they can do, and maybe trying to figure out how a team will utilize a certain player. The roster changes every year, so you know you got to go through that. But for the most part, you know, when you see a guy for, you know, T.Y. Hilton, we've seen him, you know, and we're starting to know a little bit more about his personality and what he likes to do and how he runs routes and things like that. Those things are all beneficial. You try to get like that with a team that you haven't played, and that's what we mentioned last week about off-season. Mm-hmm. You know, you try to study opponents and try to study personnel as much as possible.
Well, if you look at the Colts, you talk about they have some changes of personnel. Offensively for them, they add a terrific running back in Frank Gore, former 49er. Watching him on tape, he looks like the Frank Gore that we've seen for the last 10 years.
I think that's what's different in the Indy team this year is that I think they really want to – I mean, they've always been committed to the run game, but you're starting to see in some of the numbers. And that's because of Frank Gore, and the offensive line's doing a good job with the running game. But it's Frank Gore really makes it go. He's very patient, very instinctive, and, you know, he's played a lot of ball, so he can run any style of run.
Yeah, from watching him on film, the patience that he has, and then once he does make the decision, then the power shows. But it's very rare that you have a running back that has the combination of both of them, but Frank Gore has it. I mean, last week against Tennessee, they really came out, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like they came out with a very concerted effort because of the changes that they had in their offensive line. Say, hey, look, we need to establish something up front with Frank Gore because we've had issues in protection. And they committed to Frank Gore, and they stayed committed to Frank Gore throughout that ball game. And because they were able to get some takeaways in that ball game, they could do that.
Right. And I think this, when I talk about patience, sometimes the patience you just have to watch on our tape. You might not see it TV version. But there's some plays that he has great patience because he knows he needs it. And there's other plays he hits it like anybody else. That's the difference, I think, with Frank Gore. He understands the scheme so well. He knows when to be patient and when to hit it.
Yeah, and watching that offensive line, I went back and watched them against the New York Jets. They struggled mightily. The Jets were obviously have a very good secondary, able to play some man coverage, and so they brought a lot of extra pressure. And Andrew Luck was running for his life, and it's kind of been that way through the first couple games. That's why they made last week, they made three changes along the offensive line. Did those changes help settle them down a little bit last week against Tennessee?
Yeah, they definitely did. I think they were good changes for them. They solidified, you know, the center guard, both guard spots with some of the additions that they did or changes. So that's really the heart of the offense right there. And with Andrew Luck, you know, to be able to have that throwing lane right through the middle, that's very important to him. Now, he can extend plays, and he'll take off running. But I think that part of the game now has been solidified. You saw it in the game. Tennessee brought a lot of pressure, you know, numbers of pressure at one time right up the middle. And they end up throwing, a 35-yard touchdown to Dorsett on it. You know, so I think that part, they hope to slow things down because of, you know, the changes up front.
Well, and talking about Dorsett, Ryan Grigson, their general manager, was widely criticized for drafting him because of the need possibly for, you know, defensive or offensive linemen. And I remember reading his quote about Philip Dorsett. He said, "You just don't pass up," and he termed it, "true blue speed." And watching that play you're talking about, Philip Dorsett – was down the field and passed the secondary guy in no time.
Right. I don't, you know, if you say, hey, was it a good pick, a bad pick? That's a good pick, man. The guy's talented. He's fast. He's explosive. Now, whatever their needs are being, but where he was went and that they got him, he's got great traits. We had him in the Senior Bowl. So we know his personality, his work ethic, and, you know, he's a guy that we took a strong look at. You know, they just end up picking him, and, you know, he's just very talented.
What do you see in Andrew Luck? Because, I mean, if you look at the numbers, his numbers are down, his interceptions are up, his rating is down. But do you still see the same Andrew Luck that you've seen over the course of his first 3 years?
Well, what I've seen, yeah, I see him. You know, there's just maybe a little bit more where you see the turnovers. You know, but you still see the same throws, the same poise, the same decision making. But because of some pressure where they had some situations up front, you know, then, you know, a ball was tipped or overthrown and they got an interception on it. So it became like anybody else, huh? Five or six plays. If I could have those five or six plays back or, you know, whatever, his rating would be tremendous. So I think they look at it probably like that. Let's just correct this. Get rid of these four or five plays, and then move on.
He's been on the injury report yesterday and today. He was limited with a shoulder. As a coaching staff, how much attention do you pay to that?
I really don't get too caught up in it, and I'll tell you why. Because sometimes it's he's out, and then he's back playing. And you get caught in that emotional, So to me, it's more like, hey, I know him. I know him as a competitor, and he, although he might be limited, we're planning for Andrew Luck, and that's how we go about it. Now, every week we look at the backup because there could be an injury, and we're prepared for him. What's the style change? What do they do with him differently than they would do with the starting quarterback?
Regardless of whether the
starter's
on it.
You always have to know, you know, things about the backup quarterback. You hear what? Backup quarterback comes in, has a great day, the first game, and then usually the second or third game afterwards, people mm-hmm. kind of figure it out. Well, our philosophy is let's go in there knowing the first time, so that those things don't happen. So as with our preparation, we don't spend a lot of time on the backup, but we know enough that if it would happen, we should be prepared.
So it doesn't change one way or the other. Whether yeah. starter's on the injury report or not, you're preparing for the starter, and then you're still preparing for the backup.
That's right.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. More to come with the head coach right after this on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Gus, this week's head coach, Chuck Pagano, obviously went through a major life-changing event with the cancer that he had a couple years ago. Have you gotten a chance to know Chuck Pagano? Because just from me, from afar, I know that Tony Boselli knows him pretty well because he's from Boulder and he knows the family pretty well. But from afar, watching how Chuck Pagano has handled that life-changing event and how he's handled the media at different moments, I respect this guy. I think he's classy.
He is. I've known Chuck now for a couple years and, would consider him a friend off the field, you know, when we visit. And I mean, he's been great to me. I've seen him at charitable events. He comes down here. I think he was here down for the Tom Coughlin event and the J-Fund. And I mean, this guy is great to his players. He challenges them, but you see guys come back from everywhere he's coached to see him. You know, he's had tremendous impact on people, and he's just a grounded man and a good person.
What's it like, pregame? Head coaches that hey, shake hands. You know, have a short conversation after the game. Shake hands. What are those things like?
Well, they're good. I mean, you know, you talk, and it depends who you're talking to, but it's pretty general.
Yeah.
But it's good, you know, good conversation. And
is the conversation always better after the second time you face a division opponent because you know that, okay, it's over, we're not going to face them again?
Well, I think, before the game, too, it depends. You know, are the cameras on you? You know,
yeah.
Is there an NFL cameras right
hot?
There?
You got a microphone
you're hot.
Wired or whatever?
You know, so the conversations are depending on that a little bit, I would say. But, for the most part, everything's respectful and good. And, usually you get the, hey, you're coming along. And, hey, you're doing a good job last week. You know, it's all those.
A little superficial.
Yeah. A little bit of that. But for the most part, in the cameras, it's pretty genuine, on both sides.
Well, from reading about what's going on in Indianapolis, it's reported that there's a rift between the general manager, Ryan Grigson, and Chuck Pagano. I know that you're not aware of that, but how, just kind of along those lines, how important is it for a head coach and a general manager to coexist in a very fine fashion, I guess you could say?
Well, I think it's extremely important because if you're not, the players recognize it and the organization recognize it and fans should recognize it. So it's extremely important that there's no dysfunction going on there. And, you know, that's one thing I appreciate about Dave is it's great communication every day, you know, and it might not be talking about, it might be little things, but he's aware of everything, I'm aware of everything, and we've always been like that. And, you know, it's been great, that part. So when you hear about things like that, you know, sometimes you don't know how much of it is true, but, you know, it can happen fast. And, you know, I think you just got to respect that's so important to have that type of relationship where you're both honest and, you know, trustworthy.
Yeah, and with you and Dave, obviously you guys have a very strong bond. The amount of time that you've probably had to spend together of late was all the injuries and stuff, because, you know, the reality is that when you're talking about injuries, you have to start to talk about maybe possible roster moves and how you can deal with them. I'm sure that your guys' conversation over the last couple of weeks has been quite intense.
It is, you know, but you know, it's always with what's the best for the team, what's the best for the organization. It's always been with that intent, and that's what I appreciate. There's no other agenda. It's not about who's right and who gets their guy. It's about what's right and how are we going to do this and keep this team heading the right direction and not lose talented players because of cuts to have enough to, you know, build a roster. So those are the challenging parts, and I give Dave great credit for that. He's in charge of the 53. That's part of it, but it's never felt like that. It's never felt like that. It's always been communicated. Here's what I have to say, and then we make a decision. Again, what's best for the organization.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we'll come back. We'll talk more with the head coach, Gus Bradley, right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And we're here with that coach talking about the Indianapolis Colts and watching the Colts defense. You know, for a number of years, the Colts defense has never been one that people would say they're tough, they can stop the run, they're a little soft in the middle. I mean, people, you know, a lot of Jaguar fans even go all the way back to when Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew put up incredible numbers rushing against the Colts. But, you know, this year, watching them on film, because, you know, I was expecting to kind of see a little bit of the same old Colts, you know, to where they're not great against the run. They've got some perimeter rushers that are pretty good. And turn on the film, and they've got these two guys that are draft picks. One of them is a third-round pick out of Stanford, Henry Anderson. They call him Goose. And then a fifth-round pick out of Stanford also named David Perry. These guys are good.
Yeah, they are. I mean, that's when we had our Monday meeting, you know, and, you know, one of the scouts came in and told us about the team and kind of that preliminary scouting report. These are a couple of the first two names that were brought up on defense and just how well they're playing. And they felt like, you know, these are two really good players that they picked up on and have added to their team.
What's incredible, the fifth-round pick, David Perry, 6'1", 308. I mean, you talk about a fire hydrant in the middle in a 3-4 defense, which Indianapolis runs. He was a walk-on at Stanford. And when you watch guys that have a history that says walk-on at college, they have a certain tendency to play with some grit and play hard. That's him.
Yeah, that's right. I did not know that about him as far as a walk-on, but I do know that about the grit. He does play like that every play. And, you know, both those guys have done a great job. You know, they're a scheme fit for him, too. And I think that's what they're probably most pleased about.
Yeah, and watching the other one, Henry Anderson, 6'6", 300 pounds. He kind of reminds me on film of watching J.J. Watt, not because of the performance, but because of the size. He's got
right.
The length like J.J. Watt, and he gets great separation, and he makes a lot of tackles.
At his position, that's what they're looking for, a guy with that length and that size and, you know, can two-gap and utilize those traits. So, yeah, a very, you know, two guys that are very, very good scheme fits for them.
And watching Robert Mathis coming back, he had the suspension, then he tore an Achilles, and supposedly had multiple surgeries. They inactive week one. Week two against the Jets, he played a little bit, I think it was, And in this past week against Tennessee, I think he was right around 20 snaps. Ended up getting a sack, which actually propelled him past his teammate Dwight Freeney for 20th place all-time on the sack list, and he's at 112. He looks like he's starting to show some of the old Robert Mathis.
Right, just his motor, you know, and the high level he plays at. Like you said, it was 20 plays, and, you know, they're kind of working him back in, his conditioning, and, you know, because he plays with a high, high energy level. So always a challenge when he's on the perimeter. You know, you got to be aware of where he's at and what he can bring.
When you watch him, do you go to Dave Caldwell? Dave, you see that guy right there? That's the Leo that we would like to have, a lot of those guys.
Yeah, well.
Because he looks like a perfect Leo.
Yeah, any rushers, you know, and that's why, you know, it's great to get have an opportunity to get like Andre Branch back. When you can get rushers on the field and get them to do what they do, it's always a good sign. I'm sure they're pleased that he's back.
Well, and they got also in free agency Trent Cole, the longtime Philadelphia Eagle, who is actually second on their all-time sack list behind Reggie White, which not many people would think that anybody's ever going to pass him. But Trent Cole himself has 85 and a half career sacks. So if he gets back on the field this week and healthy, got two veteran guys to contend with.
Yeah, what I remember about Trent, too, is you know, he can line up on the inside. So you put his speed and you put it over a guard, that's what brings up even a more challenge. And he has the ability to do that.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I think it was against the Jets, that they lined up Trent Cole as the three technique and Robert Mathis beside him. Does that create a problem?
Yeah, it's something, again, you have to have great awareness for, because he brings a different style of inside rusher. And, you know, but our guys are all over that. They look at every possible guy that could rush. They watch rush cuts. They know their personalities, what they like to do. And, you know, that's one of the things that popped up was as an inside rusher.
Dwight Lowry, who is a former Jaguar, you guys actually had him when you first came here, is the starting free safety for the Colts. Last week had an incredible game. I think he got a game ball from their head coach, Chuck Pagano. He had two interceptions. One of them he returned for a touchdown. You know, for a guy that has bounced around the league, it looks like he's starting to settle in. He's got some ball skills, always has.
He's always had ball skills, and, you know, I'm just really happy for him. You know, he's kind of found a place now, and he's having some success. You know, he bounced around Atlanta last year, and you know, to have a good day like he did, you know, pleased for him, because he was great here, you know, in the locker room with our players. And, you know, just really happy for him.
All right, let's take a break. And remember, folks, as this segment's always brought to you by the Beards Jewelry at St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. More of the head coach, Gus Bradley, right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logman alongside the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, watching last week's game against the New England Patriots, one guy, and we actually had him on television this week on Monday night, and it's Ryan Davis, had a sack against the New England Patriots. Nice sack of Tom Brady. And he also had a couple other rushes in that game to where he was, I mean, you want to talk quick. I mean, beating a guard, they had some inexperience there in the interior of the New England Patriots. He didn't get there and get more sacks because Tom Brady's so quick at getting the ball out. But Ryan Davis played, I think, maybe what, 16 snaps, something like that, against the New England Patriots. I'd like to see more of them.
Yeah, I mean, he plays quite a bit now because the 16 snaps and the 20-some snaps, the special teams, and, you know, he's a key component to that. So the challenge is to keep him fresh so he stays effective in those 16 plays.
So he's splashing like he is.
Yeah, that's right, on the third downs, because he is an inside rusher. And just like we were talking about earlier with Cole, I mean, that's Ryan Davis. You know, a matchup on a guard, it's a difficult matchup. So he is. He's doing a really good job. He has for the last three games. And he's a matchup issue. He plays with great speed and great intensity. And, you know, you're always trying to find ways to get guys like that on the field. But, like I said, with the special teams and those snaps, it's critical. And we got to keep them going in that direction.
Yeah, when you look at his height, weight, I mean, 6'2", 255, 260 pounds. It's incredible that a guy with that height, weight, can have the effectiveness that he does as an inside pass rusher, because most guys that have that size, they get eaten up.
Right. Yeah, and that's where you got to utilize your quickness, your speed, you know, your first step, your get-off, you know, all those things. Because, you know, sometimes you get some air to operate on, and some of the alignments allows that to happen. And when he has space, that's what helps him be effective.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When I come back, I want to talk a little bit about the safeties and the young safety, James Sample. who had an interference call, but at the same time made some plays in that game against the New England Patriots, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus, before we went to the break, I was talking about James Sample. And James had the on the interception that was nullified because of the penalty on him. But, you know, watching him play and some of the natural instincts and the natural ball skills that he has and the way that he tackles, he looks like at some point in the future – he's going to be a guy that's going to compete for a starting position, whether it be a free safety, strong safety. I don't care who's in there, who's available, whether Sergio's healthy, Jonathan Cyprian is healthy or not. He's going to be a guy that you're not going to be able to keep off the field.
I'll tell you what he does. He came in, and he was injured, and then we got him ready, and he played free safety. He was really concentrating on that part. And then for three practices, we had to get him ready to play strong safety. And then last week in the game, he played both free and strong, depending on the formation. And then now this week he's back to some free. So unfortunate, right? You'd like to be able to let him lock in. Mm-hmm. But what great experience for him, playing strong and free. And then the instincts, like you said, the ability to make some plays and things like that, you see them. That's what we saw on tape. The penalty was unfortunate, but that was more of a playing a different style of position, came down and, you know, hadn't really done much of that. So, you know, I think the learning curve for him, he picks things up really quick. I mean, how fortunate is that? A guy that can play both positions all at the same time in the same game.
Yeah, but even the penalty that he had, you know, he was able to recover. And if he just finished it a little bit differently, it was a good play.
Right. He got in a bad position and he tried to get – he recognized it enough to get back in good position.
And he was able to do that.
Yeah, and then he just didn't finish the right way. But to have the instincts to make it right after there's a little bit of a falter, it is. And very pleased with him. Tough now. Tough-minded. Doesn't say much. Works his tail off and really wants to be good.
What are you seeing on film out of Andre Johnson, the longtime Texan? Because, you know, he kind of went through a little bit of a, I guess you could say, a transition the last year in Houston to where before that he was, you know, he was averaging 14, 15 yards a catch. And I think his last year in Houston he was averaging 9 or 10 yards a catch, kind of became more of a possession receiver. Is that the same kind of role that he's filling in Indianapolis now with his new team?
I think a couple things. One, his leadership and what he brings. There's a young receiving core, and I think what he brings to that group is beneficial. And then I see him do a lot of the same type of style of plays or routes as Reggie Wayne. It's kind of like they just swapped there, and they got that experienced guy in there that can play multiple positions for him and, you know, does a good job of it. So, you know, plays on the inside a little bit more and, you know, kind of handles that role.
One thing that's changed a little bit for the Indianapolis Colts over the last couple of years, the utilization of the tight end. You know, Dwayne Allen, Kobe Fleener, they have been a big part of that Colts offense for a number of years. This year the numbers aren't there. I know Dwayne Allen was inactive last week. He had an ankle injury. But because of the additions of a first-round pick wide receiver and a big-time, you know, free agent guy that's got great, you know, historical numbers in Andre Johnson, has it changed the role of the tight end with that offense?
Well, maybe a little bit more three wides than what they're accustomed to. But they still diverse. They'll use all their personnel groupings. Just that maybe the percentage is a little bit higher with three wides. But, you know, Allen's definitely a Y. Fleener's a U-type, you know, and they have that skill set. And I think they do a great job utilizing that skill set. Fleener, how many explosive plays has he had in this offense? And, you know, Andrew Luck trusts him, knows where he's going to be, and he can count on him.
Great opportunity against a division opponent. What do you say to your team the night before a game going into its first division game?
Well, you know, we got a high standard. You know, and we're going to set a high standard. And to go out there and have an opportunity to put everything together all week that we've worked on. And like we said, this game can't come soon enough, but let's let it take place and let's be our best and make sure we capture that.
The best part about game day, another opportunity.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you, Gus. We'll join everybody same time, same place next week right here on the Gus Bradley Show.